This show is part of the Pod Tyrant Network. For more podcasts, interviews, and content, visit podtyrant.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Bad Wolf Radio, a discussion and review podcast all about Doctor Who. I am one of your hosts, Aaron Goins, and I'm here with the man who just sent me his fan script for an alternate reality version of the 50th anniversary special, which actually does star Christopher Eccleston, Adam Farmer.
Yes, it does. It does star Christopher Eccleston, and it's not just some fan service of getting a glimpse of him as he regenerates into as the War Doctor regenerates into him. There we go. That's what happened. No, this is full on Eccleston, and you know what? It also includes the War Doctor. So we're just getting the whole gang together,
and the War Doctor. Wow, I love being able to do these intros because I can say anything.
And I have to make sense of it on my side.
And I wonder if people are like, oh, did Adam really send him a script?
You know, no, like, but by the end of this episode, I will have one.
Just for our listeners to know, I make up 99% of the stuff that I say on that intro. So, Adam.
99%? I need to go back and
maybe 100%.
Figure out which 1% isn't made up.
I think I said your favorite companion was Rory once. That was kind of accurate.
That's becoming more and more accurate. You were fortune telling there.
But no, Adam did not send me a script.
Not yet. No.
But we have
on my to-do list.
We have a ton of news actually to talk about. It's been about a month since we've recorded an episode. So we have a lot of things that have happened, events that are going on that Doctor Who actors are going to be attending or already have attended, events that I attended. So we're going to talk about all that. Plus, to top it off, we actually have the full audio of a panel from DragonCon featuring Arthur Darvill and
Rory.
Yeah, Rory and River Song.
Alex Kingston,
yes. So we have that audio that we're going to we'll tag that onto the back end of this episode. So we have a lot to talk about. We have some panel audio, and we'll try not to make it last too long, but this probably will be kind of an extra large size of Bad Wolf Radio.
I think it's funny because I text you before we jumped on and like, this will probably be a shorter one. You said max 30 minutes. And then as we start digging into it, it's like, you know what? This could actually go pretty long.
We have a lot of stuff. Yes.
There's a lot of stuff.
It was kind of like as we were doing our planning pre-episode, usually we plan a little bit earlier than just like right before we start recording. But, you know, as things happen. But today we literally just did our planning right before we started recording and thought there was two stories to talk about. And then it was like, oh, wait, there's that thing. Oh, wait, what about that? Oh, yeah, remember this? And so then suddenly we have like six stories to talk about.
Yeah, and they're fun things to talk about too, right? They're not like hard and fast, hey, here's a spoiler, here's a piece of news. They're more commentary pieces in my mind. Like they're things for us to talk about and think through.
Right, so let's get started with, let's do the DragonCon thing.
So, okay.
So I just attended DragonCon last weekend, I believe, and there was some decent amount of Doctor Who stuff going on down there, so I did want to at least talk about it a little bit or, you know, kind of share some of my experiences. Normally when I go to DragonCon, I stick with the Star Wars stuff. I'm, you know, a big Star Wars fan, have a couple other podcasts that I do that are Star Wars focused, but I am also a really big Doctor Who fan. But when I go to DragonCon, in the past, I've really stayed with the Star Wars stuff. This time, I decided, you know what? I'm going to branch out. I'm going to seek out some of this Doctor Who stuff and make time for it, make it a point to attend some of these things. And really what piqued my interest was that Arthur Darvill was going to be there, and I had never seen him live anywhere before, so I thought that would be cool to attend. So Karen Gillan was supposed to be there with Alex Kingston, and Arthur Darvill. Unfortunately, I found out the day of their panel that Karen Gillan had actually canceled. So it was supposed to be this panel.
Ouch.
Yeah, I know. It was supposed to be called the Pond Family Reunion.
Okay.
And which made a lot of sense. You know, you had Amy, Rory, and River all there. But sadly, it was just two of the three that got to do the reunion. But yeah, it turned out to be a really awesome panel, and that's the one that we're actually going to play the audio for at the end of this episode. So I won't spoil too much of what they talk about, so you guys can stick around and listen to the audio. But it was a really cool panel. Both of the actors were just a delight to listen to be honest. Neither of them came across as kind of the, oh, I wish I wasn't having to do this, or I'm only here for kind of the paycheck. They actually seemed to really enjoy the fan interactions.
Yeah, I'm really appreciative that you snagged that audio. Like, I've listened through it, and similar to what you said, I was really surprised, I guess, with Arthur Darvill, Rory specifically, that he seemed like he was having a good time with it. Like, he always struck me as one of those ones that he might have enjoyed his character, but he was glad that it was over, and he probably didn't want to be involved in it at all moving forward. But you sent a couple of pictures of him through, of him interacting with fans, and he had a huge smile on his face. And then just hearing the audio, you could tell that he was having a good time with it. And then Alex Kingston, River Song, in the audio, she seems like she's absolutely bananas. Like, she seems like River Song is who she is. She's out there. She's over the top. She has fun with it. She was fun to listen to. I was surprised to hear their interactions. But yeah, it's a solid bit of audio. I'm glad you snagged it.
Yeah, and she even talks about that in the panel, how when she goes to these events, she's almost still playing the part of River Song. So she's attending the event as Alex Kingston, but there's a little bit of River Song still there in the personality that she portrays to the fans, because she feels like that's kind of what, you know, that's what she is. That's why she's there for Doctor Who. She's there to represent not only Alex Kingston, but also to represent River Song. I think that may be just her excuse for why she acts the way she acts, because I really do think Alex Kingston is River Song, as far as, I don't think her personality is too far off of what the character's personality is.
Yeah, when she was mentioning that in the audio, it definitely resonated with me, the idea of being somewhat of a extroverted introvert, how when you're by yourself, you're more quiet, you're calm, but as soon as you get in front of people, it's like something else comes out. And that made total sense to me. But I can definitely get the sense that maybe it is kind of an excuse, because it seemed far too natural for her, and she was willing to say far too many things when she was on there. But good audio. You said that you had to seek out Doctor Who. How hard was it to track down different aspects of the Doctor Who fandom of Whovians at Dragon Con?
Well, Dragon Con it's kind of broken down into what they call tracks. And so they have the Star Wars track, the Star Trek track. You know, they have other ones too for animation. I mean, it gets really, you know, they even have a track for puppetry. They have a track for podcasting. I mean, any interest that you have, you can attend panels about it. But Doctor Who doesn't have its own track, but it's part of the what they call the Brit track, which includes kind of the notable franchises that would be included there would be things like Sherlock, James Bond, even Downton Abbey had some panels. So pretty much any you know, television that was originated in the UK is what is represented in Brit track.
Gotcha.
Something like Harry Potter, although very British, was not originated in England. It was actually, you know, a US production. So that's in a different track altogether. I think that's in like the US fantasy track or something.
Huh.
So it can get a little confusing when you're trying to find certain things and where they're at. It's across all these hotels, and the hotel that has the Brit track is very far away from the hotel that has the Star Wars track. But once you kind of get your bearings, it's not too bad. But the only big panel they had really was that Pond Family Reunion. And I know Alex Kingston actually did a kind of a solo panel, but that happened on Sunday, which I had, you know, had, I mean, that happened on Monday, which I had already left, so I wasn't able to catch that one. But yeah, so Arthur Darvill was on that panel, but he was also on the Legends of Tomorrow panel.
Yes.
So I did attend that just to kind of see him interact with those other actors, although I don't watch that television show. So that was, but it was still fun to watch just because he was a part of it. And he did bring up, because he actually plays a time traveler in that show.
Right, right.
So he was kind of talking about the parallels between that and Doctor Who and how he almost gets to be the Doctor kind of in this other show.
Nice. So,
but it's not like you were asking how hard is it to find the fandom. There are, you know, everywhere you look, costumes of Doctor Who. It's definitely got a big representation when it comes to the fans. And then the Brit track, you know, a lot of that track is focused on Doctor Who. So I did attend a couple smaller panels, and I had said something to you, Adam, about it. But after seeing the Brit track, I was like, you know what? This is something I feel like me and Adam could maybe take apart in eventually. So, you know, hopefully if I can talk to the director of the Brit track, maybe Bad Wolf Radio could have some representation in a future Dragon Con and we could do a couple panels.
Yes. Hey, I'm all for it. If it's something that we can make happen, I'm there.
All right. So, but yeah, so that was Dragon Con, but New York Comic Con is coming up in just a few weeks. And there is even more Doctor Who representation at New York Comic Con this year, which is really cool. Alex Kingston is actually making her way up to that con as well, so she'll be there. But she's doing a panel with Jenna Coleman and Matt Smith on nice. Thursday of New York Comic Con. So I will be there as well. I'm going to make it a point to try to hit that panel, and I'll try to grab audio from these panels at New York Comic Con as well. But then the big announcement at New York Comic Con was the appearance of Peter Capaldi. He's going to be doing his first New York Comic Con.
That's awesome.
Which is really cool. They're actually expanding some of the programming out into the city. So it's not going to be all at the Javits Convention Center.
Okay.
And this specific event will actually be at the at Madison Square Garden.
Nice.
I don't think it's like in the stadium portion of Madison Square Garden, but they have like conference areas and stuff in there. So Peter Capaldi, Pearl Mackey. So that's really cool. The first appearance of a companion before she's even been on TV yet. So she'll be there. And I believe Stephen Moffat is also supposed to be attending. So that will definitely be a con that if you haven't already made plans to be there, and you can somehow find a way to get tickets this late in the game. If you're a big Doctor Who fan, that's a good one to attend.
Sounds awesome.
In the class, they're having a big panel with, I think, pretty much the whole cast of the class and the creator. They're doing that at New York Comic Con as well.
Nice. I'd be interested to dig into class a little bit more. The more that's come out, the more it started to pique my interest, the direction they're taking it. So... I think when it was first talked about, it was supposed to be more of a young adult show, which, hey, it totally might still be. But they're kind of pegging it now as a less, lack of a better way of putting it, less not safe for work version of Torchwood. So I'm pretty interested to see which direction it goes.
Yeah, I'm interested enough to definitely watch, you know, at least kind of the premiere and see where it goes from there. But I will do a quick disclaimer with the appearances of Peter Capaldi and Pearl Mackey and Stephen Moffat at New York Comic Con. They did make an official announcement that all this is happening, but I have noticed in the past few days that that page has since been taken down from New York Comic Con.
Huh.
And it's harder to find information about it. So I don't know if there's been a change in schedule or, you know, if that event, you know, hopefully not, but maybe got canceled. So we are talking about it now, but if, you know, by the time you hear this episode, if they've already announced a cancellation, we did warn you there is a possibility that happened. But hopefully it's just them kind of retooling the website or making some changes to the website, and that's why it's kind of tough to find.
Yeah, I know that I think they're wrapping up filming, maybe wrapping up filming of the Christmas special. Maybe that's what they're wrapping up. They might have some filming conflicts with what they're still trying to get out there for next year.
Yeah, it's very possible. So at least we know Matt Smith, Jenna Coleman, they're going to be there with Alex Kingston. So if at the least I'll be able to grab that panel, but hopefully the Capaldi panel is still happening and I can attend that as well.
And that's a good panel. I like that panel.
The Capaldi one?
The Matt Smith, yeah. Jenna Coleman and River Song.
Yeah, I think that'll be a lot of fun. I've seen Smith at a convention before, and now I've seen Alex Kingston, so I know they both would interact. You know, they're both really funny to watch. I've never seen Jenna Coleman at a convention, so that she'll be interesting to see. But I think just from like clips and stuff that I've heard, she does pretty well at the conventions, interacting with fans and stuff too.
Yeah, that'll be good. That'll be good. So next piece is, and I'm sure that you've seen this, the clip that just showed Tom Baker providing audio for a new character on Star Wars Rebels. It's like your two fandoms colliding.
Yes, this has happened before. Yes. Because David Tennant actually came and did a voice for Star Wars The Clone Wars, which he did a great job. He was a major part of a couple. I think it was a two-parter in The Clone Wars where he plays a pretty major character, kind of guiding some of these young, you know, up-and-coming Jedi in their creation of their lightsabers. So, you know, if you haven't watched Star Wars The Clone Wars and you're a fan of Star Wars, or even if you're just a fan of David Tennant, you can seek out those episodes and watch
Netflix.
It. Yeah, they're Netflix. They are all on Netflix, but Doctor Who isn't anymore.
Nope. Bummer.
But yeah, so it has happened before, but super excited about Tom Baker coming to the cast of Star Wars Rebels, which is kind of a continuation of Star Wars The Clone Wars. A lot of the characters have carried over. So I really enjoy it as a Star Wars fan. I really enjoy Star Wars Rebels. And as a Doctor Who fan, I was very excited to see that Tom Baker will be doing a voice. And today, they just released the first clip kind of showing, you know, this character that he's playing, talking to the character Kanan Jarrus from Star Wars Rebels. And it's a pretty, you know, it's not like a super long clip. I think, what is it, maybe about a minute?
Yeah, I would say like 2 minutes at that.
Okay, so between 1 and 2 minutes of him. But it's pretty much just the dialogue between those two characters. So you get a really good idea of how Tom Baker is going to sound. And actually, I think we're going to drop in a clip here for people to be able to listen to right here on Bad Wolf Radio, just so you guys can get an idea of what he sounds like.
Ah, you heard my call. Good. Your imbalance woke me from a deep slumber.
Imbalance?
Your presence is like a violent storm in this quiet world.
You're a force wielder, but you're not a Jedi.
Wielder? Jedi and Sith wield the Ashlar and Bogan, the light and the dark. I'm the one in the middle, the Bendu. What do you call yourself?
I am Kanan Jarrus, Jedi Knight.
You carry conflict with you, Kanan Jarrus, Jedi Knight?
It's this.
Interesting.
Careful, it's dangerous.
How so?
It's a Sith holocron, a source of evil. My student's been using it, and I'm afraid it's changing him.
An object cannot make you good or evil. The temptation of power, forbidden knowledge, even the desire to do good can lead some down that path. But only you can change yourself.
So, he's got a great voice for it.
I think he's perfect. Like, for that character, he's playing this, like, force character. I don't even know how to really describe it, but he's this, he's almost this really large creature. But he's kind of almost a representation of not the light side, not the dark side, but kind of the middle ground of the force. And yeah, he has a perfect voice for it and he sounds great. You know, I know he's not super young anymore, but he sounds great. He's got a lot of life in that voice. So I'm really excited to see, you know, where that character goes in Star Wars Rebels and happy to see another Doctor Who connection to Star Wars.
Yeah. It's fun to see some of those classic Who characters popping up. I know that we got to see him at the end of the 50th anniversary and there's some speculation as to whether or not he could make another appearance, but hey, this is a Tom Baker fix. Yeah, we don't get him as the Doctor, but he's still going to play a larger-than-life character, and he has the voice to support it. So that's going to be fun to see where it goes from there.
Yeah, and I know Dave Filoni, the guy who is kind of the showrunner and executive producer of Star Wars Rebels, is a big Doctor Who fan. He was also the executive producer of Star Wars The Clone Wars. And that's why he went out and got David Tennant. So I think it'll be cool to see, as more seasons of these shows go on, who is the next Doctor that he is going to get. Maybe he'll get Capaldi to come do a voice, or maybe he'll get somebody like a Matt Smith to come do a voice. So,
or maybe he gets Eccleston to do a voice.
I hear Eccleston's a little tougher to get.
Yeah, so. I hear that he can be a bit picky here and there.
But I have heard that Eccleston may be, second guessing his length of time that he was on Doctor Who.
I don't know. How did that report strike you? So just to bring everybody up to speed, if you haven't seen it, within the last week or two, just a few tidbits here and there have dropped that Christopher Eccleston might actually regret leaving his role as the Doctor after one season. Now I won't go there yet. How did that strike you?
It originally struck me as, okay, this is a headline that's just, it's like clickbait, and they probably misquoted him, and that somebody's just, trying to bring this story back up because they know people like to talk about this.
Yeah.
That's my cynic view, at least when I first saw the headline. But when I did read into it, it did seem like there was some true, I wouldn't even necessarily call it regret, but maybe just him as an actor in honing his craft as the character, he felt like it was a little unfinished.
Yeah, which makes a lot of sense. When you read it in context of what he's saying, as far as they were wanting him to do some light comedy, and he had never really done light comedy in a character before. So, but just that idea of even just a sliver of regret to have walked away after one season, that's really not something I expected of Eccleston. It's really not something that I've ever heard his leaving the show framed in. I always heard that, hey, he was more than ready to get out of there. He essentially ran from the show and wanted nothing to do with it from that point forward. This seems like a total reframing of that picture in my mind.
Yeah, I think as time has gone on, I mean, that was a long time ago that he was on Doctor Who. Many years have passed. So I think he's probably looked back through a different lens and maybe seen, seen the merits of the show and his time on it. And I don't think it's not like something where he wishes he could turn back time and do another season of Doctor Who, but I feel like his relationship with Doctor Who and how much he wants to relate himself with it has changed a lot over the years. And even with the 50th anniversary, we know that he did turn down the opportunity to be a part of it, but he did at least consider it. When you hear him talk in interviews, it wasn't just a, flat out, no, I would never do that. He thought about it. He did consider doing it, eventually decided not to. But with that, and even with hearing this, it's kind of like, okay, maybe he's kind of coming around to, realizing that being a part of Doctor Who wasn't necessarily a bad part of his career. And, who knows what that could lead to in the future with, the possibility of him maybe doing something for Doctor Who in the future.
I think it's the 50th anniversary episode that still raises that big question mark in my mind, though. Like, I'm glad you brought it up, but that idea of he turned it down. And I guess in my mind, I can't think of a good reason as to why you would turn down just one episode, like for fandom, for the character, what have you. If you really wish you had more time to develop that character, here's one last episode where you could knock it out of the park, if you will. I think that's where the question still comes up in my mind, because it was really easy to be like, okay, he didn't come back for the 50th anniversary episode, the episode we all wanted to see him in. Because he just flat out hates that aspect. He hates that part of his past, that character he played. Or he hates the producers of Doctor Who or something like that. But I don't know. I'm finding it a little bit harder to reconcile it in my mind now, knowing that there is a part of him that wishes he might have had just a hair more time with it.
Yeah, but I think it really comes from a place of, like I said before, honing his craft, more than it does from a love for Doctor Who. And, you know, when you read the quotes on this and saying kind of he wished he had a second season, it was more about he wasn't necessarily satisfied with his performance in the first season, and he wasn't getting the light comedy, and he felt like he was getting better as he went on. But he, I think, as an actor, is looking back and saying, oh man, like, that wasn't my best performance, and if I only had had a second season, I really could have nailed it.
Yeah, but even more of a reason to do it one last time.
Right, yeah.
If you strike out all season long and you have the opportunity to step up to bat one more time, and you have wanted the opportunity to maybe leave a better lasting picture in people's memories, or maybe you feel like you've honed your craft even more now and you're going to get that home run, you step back up to the bat and you are back up to the plate and you knock it out. That's... I don't know. Maybe
at the point of the, I mean, Christmas special, we're talking about, I mean, the 50th anniversary special, we're talking what, a couple years ago, right?
It's been 4 years.
And when they first approached him, it was even longer ago than that. So, I mean, he may, even now he's thinking, oh yeah, I wish I had a second season. Well, 4 or 5 years ago, he might not have even thought that.
Yeah, so, I think it's just my fan bitterness inside of me that's having a hard time reconciling it.
I completely agree with you. I wish he came back. I think there is some pride involved there in why he didn't come back for the 50th. I think it would have been great for the fans. It would have been a nice kind of gesture on his part, just, you know, kind of, hey, you know, I still do care about this, you know, this Doctor Who thing that I was a part of, and kind of realizing how big of a thing it is and acknowledging that and being a part of it. But you see something like, even with like Harrison Ford, you know, for all the years saying, oh, I'll never do Star Wars again. I hate the character of Han Solo. He has mocked the character of Han Solo for years, saying he, you know, that's a character he's not that proud of and all this stuff. And then he came back and did another movie. So, you know, people change their mind.
Yeah, I can see how Eccleston and Harrison Ford might be cut from the same cloth. They both carry themselves very similarly. Okay, I'll give it to you.
Yeah, so I think it would be cool if they somehow, you know, got him involved in Doctor Who in some way in the future. Do I think it'll happen? Probably not. But I would love to see another run with the ninth. I actually really enjoyed him. I think you did as well. And yeah. I know a lot of people did. A lot of people really did. He's not one of those where everybody kind of looks back and is like, oh, wow, the Ninth Doctor was like my least favorite Doctor. You usually hear him pretty high in the list when you hear people kind of list their favorites.
Yeah. I mean, he had the leather jacket. He definitely had a distinct look of all the Doctors that all the modern Doctors. He's probably the most distinctive.
Yeah. So we have Eccleston. And, you know, he's somebody that is no longer a part of Doctor Who. But we have this other man, Mark Gatiss, who seems to stick around
Mark
Doctor
Gatiss.
Who. He's always there. He's writing episodes every once in a while. He has a love for it. He obviously has a, you know, some companionship with Stephen Moffat because they created Sherlock together. And he keeps popping up. So what is the latest from Mark Gatiss?
Well, he decided to... He decided to come forth and let everybody know that he's had the opportunity to read the script for the Christmas special. And according to him, it is one of the best scripts he's ever read. And it brought him to tears. We don't know what type of tears. We don't know if they were happy tears or if they were sad tears. But the script made Mark Gatiss cry. How does that strike you?
There was a time where I would have taken, you know, something from Mark Gatiss and been like, yeah, you know, that means a lot to me. You know, if he says it's good, it's going to be good. But then he wrote Sleep No More. And now I'm a little more skeptical. The last few episodes, I think, that he's written, I haven't necessarily loved. So if this is a Mark Gatiss approved episode, I'm a little nervous.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. That's because of Sleep No More. His reputation is just sullied in my mind. That's, I remember reading all those reports about how it's going to be Mark Gatiss is writing the scariest episode of Doctor Who ever. It's just going to rock fandom. It's going to be an amazing episode. And then we watch it and it's Sleep No More. And it might have been the scariest episode just because of how terrible it was and how it made no sense. It scared me in my fandom. I don't know. Maybe it definitely scared me. So reading that the Christmas special is the best script ever, definitely taking that with a grain of salt.
And I'm assuming that Stephen Moffat wrote the Christmas special.
Yeah, yeah.
So we know he's friends with Stephen Moffat. So, you know, this could be coming from a place of friendship. And he's like, yeah, you know, just giving Stephen Moffat his props. And yeah, he just wrote an amazing episode. And we know Stephen Moffat can write an amazing episode of Doctor Who. So that does, you know, give me high hopes for this Christmas special. But more because of the fact that Stephen Moffat's writing it and not necessarily because Mark Gatiss gave it his thumbs up.
The script supposedly is absolutely beautiful and one of Moffat's best ever. Out of curiosity, we're going to do this. We're going to go on record. Where do you think this will fall in Christmas episodes, Christmas specials?
I mean, that's a hard question to ask considering I haven't seen it. And just based on the very small amount of information we have on it, we do know that it is a bit of a continuation of kind of what happened in the last Christmas special, right? Like we at least know some characters crossover.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
So I think, and I did really enjoy the last Christmas special. So I think I'm going to like this one. I like Peter Capaldi in general. I've liked both of his Christmas specials. So I think, you know, it's probably going to be better in my opinion than the Matt Smith one about the kids and the Christmas present and going into the other dimension with the wooden people.
Yeah. The wardrobe.
Yeah. The doctor,
the widow, the doctor and the wardrobe. Yes. Is that what that one is?
Yes. I didn't like that one so much. The other Smith one where he does the regeneration was kind of lackluster for me, but Capaldi stuff has been good. So Christmas specials with Capaldi. I'm excited.
Christmas with Capaldi.
Yeah, and it's the only Doctor Who we get all year, so it better be good.
Yeah, that is very, very true.
They've had plenty of time to you know, prep for it and get it near perfect. So I'm hoping it's good. I hope I'm not let down, and then we have to wait another 4 or 5 months for more Doctor Who after that airs.
Remind me, your favorite Christmas episode up to this point.
Oh man, I don't know. Because I'm trying to think of them all in my head right now. I liked the flying shark one. I thought that was really good, although the shark part was kind of weird. what was that called? Was it the Christmas Carol? It was very Christmas Carol inspired.
Yeah, it was very Christmas Carol-esque.
The snowman was all right. I liked the one with Santa Claus. That was a good one.
Memory Crabs?
Yeah.
The Dream Crabs.
The Dream Crabs. And remind me, so the River Song one was the Christmas special, right?
Yep. Husbands of River Song.
Husbands of River Song. I don't know. Maybe that one's my favorite right now. I really did like that.
Really?
I'm a big River Song fan. I like a lot of stuff that she's in. Going back through the seasons recently and kind of determining what episodes I really like to rewatch, I found that I come back to the River Song stuff a lot.
Huh. Okay, I'm gonna be amazed if this. I will be pleasantly surprised if this upcoming episode surpasses A Christmas Carol in my mind.
Is that your favorite?
I would say that's my favorite Christmas special. Yeah,
it is really good. It's very timey wimey, which I've always liked the timey wimey stuff when the doctor's kind of jumping from one time to another and kind of getting lost in like kind of forgetting stuff that he does and how it affects time and all that. So,
and it has the heartbreak. It's all about the feels. It's a good one.
Yeah, you're right. That you may have just convinced me that it's my favorite.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, moving right along, because we've talked about Eccleston leaving, not coming back. We talked about Gatiss, who just won't go away. Another individual that seems to crop up every now and then, John Barrowman.
We don't have to spend a lot of time on this because I feel like we give him too much time anyway.
He's the new 5 minutes of Danny Pink.
Yeah, 5 minutes of John Barrowman. You always hear the stuff, oh, is he coming back? And is he hinting at coming back? He is coming back, but it's on a Big Finish audio drama. So,
truth be told, he's been in the news quite a bit as of late, and that's why he keeps coming up. Because number one, he accused Stephen Moffat as being the blocking factor as to why there's no more Torchwood episodes. He says if it wasn't for Moffat, there'd be more Torchwood, and then he could come back at some point in Doctor Who. He's come out and said that. And now we're told that, okay, he has these three new Big Finish audio dramas, The Lives of Doctor, The Lives of Captain Jack. He's going to be in the Hooniverse for a little bit longer.
I wonder almost if this was just BBC's way of like kind of keeping him quiet, where he's just like, he's going to these conventions, he's getting fans' hopes up that he's coming back. Like, oh yeah, it could happen. And then they're like, you know what? Stop. We're not going to bring you back to the show. Here's a couple audio dramas you can record. Keep him busy for a while. But I don't expect to see John Barrowman back in the actual televised version of Doctor Who.
See, I
not that I wouldn't. I liked the character. I did like the character, but he is very much a part of, you know, kind of the 10th Doctors. Tenet. Yeah, he's a part of that run of Doctor Who. And, yeah. And he's probably right. When Moffat took over and things changed, it probably is the reason why Torchwood was also a big part of, you know, the previous showrunner stuff, that it didn't continue on because Moffat probably had no interest in continuing it.
I just have a hard time saying that he won't show up. I have this sneaking suspicion that he's going to make an appearance at some point. I thought Riversong wasn't going to show back up, and here she is. And I don't think she's even done. That she could still show back up. I don't know. We'll see. Like you said, we don't need to spend too much time with good old John Barrowman. I'm sure we'll talk about him next podcast too.
Yeah, we'll find the 5 minutes.
And finally, Second Doctor animation.
Yeah, so this is really cool, exciting news, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
The first adventure of the Second Doctor, kind of, you know, funny enough, where we left off with the classic series.
Yep.
When what was it? What we were watching on Amazon Prime, right?
Hulu? We were going through Hulu.
That's right, Hulu. We were watching them through Hulu.
Back in the day.
Hulu ripped them away from us. Netflix took down all their Doctor Who stuff, including their classic stuff. And right now, all we have access to is modern series on Amazon. But no classic. So we used to do all the reviews of, you know, the First Doctor stuff, and we finally finished the First Doctor, and right as we were about to jump to the Second Doctor, all that stuff went away.
It all disappeared.
So it was almost like they heard our cries, and they actually have taken, the scripts from the lost episodes, which the Second Doctor's very first adventure is completely lost. None of it survived. The actual television show didn't survive. So based on, I think, just like stills and scripts, they're actually recreating that adventure in animation. And it's going to air on both the BBC and on BBC America.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I'm excited. Really cool. I don't know like what that's going to be like. I've seen a little bit of kind of what the animation will look like. It's interesting. I'm not sure, you know, if that's the type of animation I would prefer, but it's probably not going to be like kind of the high-end animation you're used to seeing, you know, maybe in theaters and stuff. But I don't know. I think it's going to be pretty cool just to be able to see. I think they even said the regeneration from the first Doctor to the second is also part of this. So you'll get to see that as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask what you thought about the animation style. The statement in the website, The Power of the Daleks, is being produced by the team behind the highly successful animation of Lost Dad's Army episode, A Stripe for Frasier, first released on a BBC store February this year. So it sounds like people enjoyed the animation style. I was really intrigued. It's Doctor Who, and the animation style looks incredibly different. I'm all for it. I'm excited about that animation. I'm going to find a way to pick this one up.
Yeah, we're definitely going to watch it. We'll probably do a review of it on an episode of Bad Wolf Radio. It's coming up soon, right? It's like November, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be released on BBC Store on Saturday, November 5th, followed by a DVD on Monday, November 21st.
Okay, so it's coming up soon. I know it's going to be on BBC America, so that's probably how I'll catch it. I'm sure it'll show up in iTunes and in those kind of places as well, so you'll be able to watch it.
I have my ways.
Yeah, there'll be definitely be a way for us both to catch it, so we will talk about it after it airs. I'm a little wary of Doctor Who animation because I don't know. I think you're aware of this, but there was an animated series for Doctor Who.
Yep.
Very limited run with 10th Doctor Adventures, and it was pretty bad. I watched through them, you know, because I wanted to see all the adventures, and yeah, they weren't very good.
I didn't think they were bad.
Okay. But... well, maybe, you know, well,
I'm not very discerning when it comes to my animation.
I'm excited for it. I've seen the second Doctor in some of the I think there was a five Doctor special maybe that he was a part of, maybe it was a three Doctor special that I did catch a little bit of him in some of the classic stuff, but I haven't seen him extensively, and I've definitely never seen this first adventure. So I'm actually, when I saw that news, it was one of the most exciting Doctor Who news items that I've seen in a while.
Yeah,
and it kind of sets the precedence, maybe if this is successful, you know, they may, you know, kind of do the same thing for other lost episodes.
Yeah,
which is really exciting for people like us who missed that obviously when it first came out, and would love to see some of the stuff that's been lost.
Yeah, and I feel like we're in a really good position for this one, just to have the background that we did from the first Doctor and getting caught up at least as much as we could up to this point. I know there's a lot of other lost episodes. I would love to see this happen to them, but I feel like I would need to do a lot of reading up to get up to speed on where those episodes fall in. But it would be incredible just to see more and more stuff like this. And I think what made this news so exciting is it was totally unexpected. At least for my part, I had no idea this was even in the works. So it's really awesome to see this one kind of float out there and that there's a realistic possibility to be able to catch it.
So yeah, that was all the news items, a lot more than we typically talk about, but it has been a while since we recorded an episode. That alone could have covered an episode of Bad Wolf Radio.
Whew.
I think we kind of rushed through some of the stuff that we may have spent more time on, but we did want to leave some space at the end for this audio from Dragon Con. And the way we're going to do this is we're actually going to close out the show here, do all of our kind of closing credits and everything. And then after that, that's where the audio is going to be. So just because you hear us going through this stuff doesn't mean the show is ending. There is another close to an hour's worth of audio of Arthur Darvill and Alex Kingston at Dragon Con, which I highly recommend sticking around and listening to it because it's really good. Some really cool stories that they tell. It's not one of those panels that you go to at a convention where the actors seem disinterested or, you know, they're not really animated. It's the entire panel is very entertaining.
Yeah,
so I would definitely recommend sticking around after the credits and listening to that. All right. So you can, as usual, leave us a review on iTunes if you're listening to our show and you enjoy it. We'd love for you to head on over to iTunes and leave us a nice 5-star review. You can follow us on Twitter at Bad Wolf Podcast, Facebook, search for Bad Wolf Radio. We're the one with the black and white logo. And you can send us emails, badwolfpodcast@gmail.com. And as always, you can find us on the Pod Tyrant Network over at Geek Tyrant. And if you are going to New York Comic Con, I'm going to New York Comic Con. If you happen to see me, if you listen to our show, I'd love to meet you. Don't be shy. Just say hi. And...
oh, look at that. Look at that. Well played. Well done.
I already put that in a tweet. But until next time.
Oh, later days.
Yeah. Those are the ones that are like, please God, just shut up. Well, just to begin, I was just sort of thinking about this. Like, now that you're on Arthur's on Legends of Tomorrow, and you've been established in the Arrowverse, so
my daughter is working with Arthur on Legends.
Yeah,
my daughter from Arrow.
Lots of weird crossover there, but I know you don't know whether or not anything will actually come to pass, but would you guys like to kind of cross over in that DC world with one another? Like, hey, don't I sort of know you look familiar? That would be wonderful. I think so, too.
Hell yes, absolutely. I love it. I think it'd be really great. Yeah. And also because we have, technically Captain Jack as well.
Yes. Who's
also has the potential to into the different
all the different shows. He's coming onto Legends.
And Legends, you see, so
just need you.
Yeah, just need me. Exactly.
Just get all of you guys in a room and right there, probably like Tumblr or something that would explode just by that hand moment of all of you guys sharing that scene together. And I'm actually sort of speaking on that, Alex. I read, and I don't know if it's correct or not, but you actually had done stage work with Sean Pertwee before. Is this
absolutely, right? Yeah. One of the very first, it wasn't professional, but it was sort of like the first youth theatre thing I ever did, was a production of a play called Tom Jones. And Sean played a character called Captain Fitzpatrick, and I played his wife, Lady Fitzpatrick. We were 15 years old.
Oh, wow.
And I had such a crush on him. But he was, you know, he was kind of one of the naughty boys. So I just thought, I'm just going to look, but don't go close, because I know I might get burnt.
Do you ever find it a bit surreal, though, that, like, you know, all of you are established actors, have, like, a lot of great body of work, and yet it's also like, oh, I'm working on a superhero show. Oh, I'm doing a superhero movie. Like, I'm going to fight zombies. Do you ever find that those kind of work conversations a bit surreal amongst all of your colleagues?
Totally. Like, the whole landscape has completely changed now. And most of the stuff that we do now is running away from something or running towards something. It's kind of mad.
But that's what we did as kids.
Yeah.
So it's just like, it's still, in a funny sort of way, it's still like playing, being children.
Yeah.
So you're running away from the monster or running towards the monster or whatever it is.
Yeah. There's so many moments where I go, God, my 8-year-old self would absolutely love this.
Exactly. Yeah, and I used to perform operations on my neighbour's sons when I was a kid, so going straight on to ER.
When I need to do a doctor show, I told everyone at my infant school that I was a doctor when I was a kid, and tried to fix my friend Ben's neck by twisting it to the side, and came in the next day with a neck brace on.
I won't tell you what I tried to do. A pair of scissors.
I want to throw to the audience, but you know, I kind of got word that there's a very special young gentleman here with a great question ready to go. So, is there an Arlo out here? Is there Arlo out there? Okay, Arlo, I hear you've got a question.
Oh, the microphone is on its way.
Yeah. It's just building the anticipation, though, which is great.
Okay.
It's like Arlo is owning this panel, so.
Okay, I was just wondering what both of you guys' favorite episodes of Doctor Who were.
Solid question.
Great question. I change my answer every time I answer this. I'm definitely lying, but I'm also telling the truth. Because I enjoyed all of it. I really like the ones where we were all together. And like coming out and filming in Utah together was amazing. And any time I got to go on holiday, whilst filming. So we went to Croatia and did the vampires episode. That was really good. Alex.
I've been asked this question before, and I always sort of have said, because Stephen Moffat only wrote for my character, he wouldn't let any of the other writers write for my character. So I sort of feel that if I were to say that one episode was my favourite, it would in some way deny the others or make it seem as though I felt the others were less good or less successful, which I don't believe. So out of all of the episodes that I was in, I don't have a favourite because I think they were all fantastic because I was in them. Out of the episodes that I wasn't involved in, the episode that I really love, and again, I have answered. I'm consistent. I am absolutely consistent with my answers. It was the Vincent Van Gogh episode. Not because of the big, dangerous chicken, but because of the amazing and very, very moving relationship between the Doctor, his companions, and between Vincent Van Gogh, who I think he was portrayed so brilliantly, and the ending always makes me cry. So, that's my favorite. Yes.
Thank you so much, Arlo, for a great question.
Thank you.
When you first were cast in the show, or when the episodes started airing, I mean, obviously, it came to be a 50-year-old show, so iconic, people have very personal and strong opinions about this show. What do you recall about those initial fan reactions to your characters?
I don't think I've got any, it's so weird, because we were so nervous about the whole thing, because Matt was... you know, a new Doctor, and David was so well loved by everyone, and I know Matt was so terrified by the idea of it. When we were making it, it was a lot of fun. We didn't really feel the pressure, but as it came to closer and closer to it airing, we all suddenly felt the pressure of it. And we sat and watched a rough cut of the 11th Hour in, I think it was in one of the producers' apartments in Cardiff, and it wasn't finished, and it was cobbled together, and we all sat there watching like this, going, "Oh my God, what am I doing? I'm terrible in this. Everyone's going to hate this." And we all had a really similar horrible feeling to it. I think because just it suddenly dawned on us what it means to everyone that it was actually going to be on television. And then as soon as it aired, all of our fears just went away. The reaction was, I've never had a bad comment or anyone come up to me and go, "God, I think you guys really suck." Like, it's been so warmly received, and I'm constantly overwhelmed by the enthusiasm and the fact that I'm still talking about it. It's amazing. It's been really good.
I think also, I don't know whether it's anything that you, because you are all fans, you probably don't really fully really appreciate, but the pressure was enormous on them. And I had been brought in a funny sort of way to sort of just be a familiar face for the fan base already, and to guide Matt and Karen initially into the first episode, and to kind of hold their hand in a funny sort of way. Not that they needed it, because they even though they didn't feel it themselves, they absolutely knew who they were and what they were doing. But the thing that was so strong was you felt that the media in particular were anticipating failure. Everybody was waiting for this unknown person, Matt Smith, to fail. So the fact that not only did he not fail, but that actually he the baton got passed onto him from David, and he just ran with it with such sort of delight and energy and passion, was just amazing. And it speaks a lot to Karen and Arthur for sort of just taking the journey on and making it as exciting as it is.
Yeah. Well, but how about your experience? Because you came in, you know, in a guest role with David. Was there? I mean, I realize that when you're coming in a guest role, you're sort of you're a house guest. You're coming into someone else's project. But did you feel any kind of pressure since you were kind of a big character that had more to come?
Well, I didn't know that I had more to come. I mean, I thought I just had a two-episode story arc. And so I went into it just thinking, this is a great job, it's a great character, it's a great story, and I'm just going to kind of just do the best I can with it. And I will have then participated in this fantastic genre, fantastic cultural icon, which is Doctor Who. And so for me, I just sort of thought, okay, check that off my bucket list.
Mm-hmm.
With no thought that I might play out. So when I did, it was sort of, then I did feel differently. I sort of thought, okay, well, they know what they're doing with the character. They feel confident in my portrayal of her. And so she's being brought back just to sort of help ease Matt and Karen into the show. But I never, ever, I still don't. I don't know when my time is up. I still haven't been told.
Let's throw it to the audience. We have the microphones here and here, so we'll start over here on my right.
So I have a gentleman up front that asked this question for Alex. What is it like playing a character, knowing that she was the daughter of the two characters she's with, and they don't know?
I knew for about 6 months before. I didn't know at the beginning. I didn't know when I first started playing with her. But in that particular season, it was about 6 months prior that Stephen told me, because normally they just contact my agent at very short notice to see whether I'm available and whether I'd be interested in being part of an episode. And, you know, I sort of literally have about 3 weeks' notice. But because this was a storyline that Stephen was having to build up within the season, he had to make sure that I would make myself available. So he had to tell me the secret.
Which was delicious for us, because we didn't know. And there was a massive guessing game. I don't know if I've told this story with you here, but I don't know if you remember when we had a conversation, I think, was it in Utah?
I don't know.
I can't remember. And we were all trying to guess, and I went, Alex, is it?
Oh, all... I did, I don't
know. Yeah. Is it not the you know, you just turned around to me and went, hello, Dante.
How did that revelation for you, Arthur, affect or alter your performance, or even your dynamic,
made it very tricky. It was so wonderful. You never knew what was going to come when you opened the script, and it was always such an exciting day, especially because you got them really late as well, so you only really got them sometimes a few days before you were shooting them, which was lovely. But it was like reading a book that you're in. Right? And every twist and turn. I'd already had quite a few surprises before then, so this just added to. So when I got the job, I just thought I'd be kind of awkward, bumbling boyfriend for a few episodes and then be off. So the fact that my storyline was such an amazing journey, and then was interweaved with this much bigger, wonderful. Story. It was just a joy to be a part of it. So unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you find yourself interacting with Alex differently?
No, I kept my cool very much. Really cool.
Kept his cool. I think this is part of the reason why Stephen doesn't like to tell the actors what's going on, because he doesn't want them to alter the way they are performing.
Yeah, yeah.
He was worried that it might have made them change or make different decisions about how they would work with me in a scene if they had that knowledge. So they carried on behaving like the Rolling Stones. Rolling Stones golden years, not Rolling Stones like now. I would always describe the three of them like a sack full of puppies. And I'm supposed to be the daughter, but I was constantly like the mum, trying to sort of, you know, keep them
under control. You had a lot of fun, though.
Yeah. Oh, good fun. I mean, Matt is Mick Jagger.
Yeah.
You're Ronnie Wood.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. 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 So that just leaves Karen.
Yeah, I kind of want to leave that one out there for a second. Let's take a question over here.
What was your favorite moment off set, like pranks or anything like that?
Can't talk about it. We had so much fun. It's so funny, but you get these amazing episodes, but all the memories I have are just, you know, hanging out with everyone and getting to travel with everyone, going to Utah and then doing, it's not even when we were filming, but that trip to New York we had to promote the season, suddenly we didn't really know if it was going to be a success in America. We didn't know if there was an audience over here. And when it started going out, the audience felt was quite small. And we got to New York and there were like queues around the block for the cinema and people going absolutely nuts. That was quite a rock and roll weekend, actually. But that was a big... a big memory for us.
How many hours sleep do you think you had to eat?
Two or three. Yeah. I mean, and if I may interject, but that, it kept growing. Like, I mean, I remember the Paley Center thing.
Yeah,
I was there for that. Like, then it was the first San Diego Comic-Con, Matt and Karen went to that, and then, like, it just kept growing. And then when you filmed in Central Park,
yeah,
the police didn't even anticipate the crowds that would be gathering there.
They'd given us like five police.
Yes.
But it, like, total testament, because we were filming in the middle of Central Park in New York, and all these guys were ducked up to what? Like, they didn't know what it was. And then hundreds and hundreds of people turned up to watch us filming. And also, it was quite a big episode for us, and we didn't want anything to be spoiled. And so we were really... we kind of started panicking. We thought, oh, God, everyone's going to see what happens, and they're going to, you know, ruin the shot. But there's something amazing about Doctor Who fans. As soon as they were like, okay, turning over, and action, everyone just was totally silent. And there were no barriers to stand behind, but everyone managed to get into a little group together. And it was such a wonderful respect that everyone had for the show and us. And thank God, because you could have just terrorized us and carried us away. But it was a really brilliant thing.
Yeah.
Do you remember when we were filming in Monument Valley?
Yes.
And we had this, we had a really early call. It was sort of like 4 a.m. And there were already fans. They found us in Monument Valley in Utah. And they were already sort of walking up
yeah.
the street out of the dark. And then... it's all very deserty, and there'd be these sort of random people just walking through the desert. It was like The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
I mean, really seriously.
Yeah. They stayed like up a hill. They just like, walked up and were in silhouette with their like hands and glasses of coffee. That's even more terrifying. It was really, really.
That's you! That's you!
Like, how did you find us? Still don't know now.
No, I don't
know. My question is for Arthur.
Hi.
I was able to see you, and actually Carlos too, in once in New York, and you were really good. But would you consider doing musical theater again? Is that something you enjoyed?
Absolutely. It's my favorite thing I've ever done, was that show. And I love New York, so I'd love to go and do stuff on Broadway again. That show was kind of unique because I got to play a singer in a band. I don't have a very kind of musical theatre voice, so it felt like just a perfect fit, and I had so much fun doing it. And with Carlos, who's in the show, who plays Cisco in The Flash, so we did the show together. And in fact, he's an awesome musician. If you get a chance, check his stuff out on YouTube. He's a killer bass player. But yeah, no, I'd love to do musical theatre.
You should do the Rocky Horror music.
I love it.
Stockings.
Thanks. What? It's weird to think what's going on.
If you were to adapt an episode of Doctor Who to the stage, which one would it be?
Oh, what, like a bit like the Harry Potter they've adapted out to the stage?
Sort of, yeah.
That's actually quite a good idea. What would you do? It would have to be something with a target.
You in a spacesuit floating around.
Oh yeah, I'd love that.
Singing.
Yeah, you need music for this.
But you could have because theatres now, particularly in England, in London, almost all theatres, the stage has usually a big sort of like revolving turntable built into the stage. So you absolutely could have the interior of the TARDIS.
Yeah.
And then it could revolve and then you could be somewhere else.
Yeah.
Even Muppet, do you hear us?
Coming down like some wire work or whatever, the space suit and guitar, like ground control the major song, I guess. I dig that. Take it to the internet, guys. Yeah. Big question over here.
Hi. So Rory went through a really big character arc throughout the course of the season. So what do you think season 7 Rory would say to season 5 Rory?
Oh. Thanks. Don't panic. It's all going to be alright. But what's so great about the end of their story? Like, I do think they got a chance of happiness in the end. I think it's a beautiful end. But God, I don't think he'd be able to. I think he'll just have to say it's all going to be alright in the end. But I don't think season 5 Rory's brain could deal with anything. It has to be fed in little tiny bite-sized pieces, because I think he'd just go, actually, that's not worth it. I'm fine here, actually. He should say it's all going to be okay.
Does River? I don't know, the timeline is so screwy, so I don't know, but like if River were to cross over with River, like, would there be some sort of advice to impart upon her from an older self?
In a funny sort of way, she did cross over, but she didn't, because she regenerated twice.
Yeah.
I think she'd just say, don't blink and carry on.
Yeah.
I think she rather likes the way she's turned out.
Yeah. Go over here.
Yes, this is another theater question for Arthur.
Yes.
I really loved your work as Mephistopheles in Shakespeare's Globe's production of Dr. Faustus.
Thanks.
And I would love to hear you talk a little bit about your approach to the character and his relationship with Faustus.
I was really terrified, because I loved the play so much from when I was a kid. It was quite a journey to get to where it was, and I kind of worked out that Mephistopheles has got so much of him and Faustus are so similar, I think. And by halfway through rehearsals, we really started playing on that and wanted to make them kind of two parts of one personality. He was almost tempting himself. I had such a great time doing that show, and just being in that theatre. So Shakespeare's Globe Theatre is a proper recreation of Shakespeare's theatre. It's have you ever played there?
Not at the Globe.
It's like it's the most terrifying space because you've got people all around you. And we had a thrust stage that went right out into the middle of the crowd. You've got hundreds of people standing in the yard, all looking up. And I was working with an actor called Paul Hilton and his wife Anastasia when just before we opened. Me and Paul were both quite nervous about it, as you get before a show. And she's this amazing woman. She said, "Just imagine that all the people who are standing there in the crowd are actually holding the stage up, holding you up. And when you walk out there, it does actually feel like that because everyone's underneath you looking up." And that really helped. And it's such a brilliant experience. If you ever go to London, please go and see a show because it's an amazing experience. Yeah. It's very cool. Good question. Yeah, good question. Okay,
thank you both so much for coming. I love you both and your characters. My favorite season is the puns on Doctor Who. My question is, being a companion that kind of gets killed off and then comes back again, how did that affect how you approached your characters when you were revived?
Just because there's no frame of reference. It was really fun. It was really fun because you can kind of treat death with a total irreverence. You go, "Oh God, I died. It was horrible. But I'm back, so let's just carry on." It was a really good, fun exploration. It's the thing I died so many times. It was really interesting to see how that affected Rory. But I think that was part of it. Like, it was part of Rory's growth. As a human being, that he had to die that many times in order to kind of become the hero that he was by the end.
That's really useful.
Yeah. I mean, sort of on that note, this show impacts fans and impacts people's lives, and I know all these guys are coming up to you and saying, "This has helped me in this way, or impacted me in this way." Rory learning to become a hero, and River is like really like that confidence and how she exudes so much strength and humor, I think, in some difficult times. But what are some of the things that the fans have said to you that your characters have impacted me in this way or taught me to feel this way?
I just get I get men coming up to you going, "Thanks. Yeah, thanks. I'm never going to live up to that." So I ruined my entire relationship. That's the men one I get.
Yeah. And yeah, but he's such a relatable, everyday guy that becomes a hero, so that should be inspirational and aspirational.
Yes, I suppose. It's impossible to wait for 2,000 years for someone, I think. Sorry, I'm really sorry. It's Stephen Moffat.
I certainly didn't ever anticipate that I would get the sort of reaction from women that I do, women and girls. I still weirdly don't quite get it. I mean, I just do what I do, but the character is a very sort of strong female character. She's a role model to an extent, but she's pretty badass. I'm not sure what sort of a role model that is. But I have a lot of people who come up to me and say how, by watching the show and by sort of connecting with River, that it sort of helped them through difficult times. The one thing that I will always just say is it's great that you have a show that you do watch and that you do connect to, and that does, you know, enjoying that show and being connected to the show does help you through things, but that it's you yourself that actually are the person who's pulled yourself through. It's not us that have done it, it's you yourselves. And but it's also kind of sad to hear from people who are having such a tough time in this world. And I'm somebody who loves life, and I'm so happy to be alive. I'm so happy that I've had this chance to be born, that I just want to, you know, take it by the balls and just go. I'm planning to be here still when I'm 102. So. And just enjoy.
I did quite like that you started by saying horns, but then you're like, no, we're going for balls. We're balls. Okay, here.
Hello. Real quick, I just wanted to say that me and my best friend both agree that Rory and River are the best part of 11 seasons.
Oh, well, of course. Hello. Yeah.
But my question is, what were your favorite scenes and or lines to film, and why?
Alex. well, of course, I have my iconic one-liners, my taglines.
You have the best lines.
I have the best lines.
Chris Stephen, one of Alex's episodes, she just, every time he gets a video, Alex has got all the best lines and best of the best. It was amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. All my lines are fabulous. but I have to say, actually, it was really great that in the Husbands of River song that I did with Keith, it was so nice that actually Stephen Moffat turned tables on me and actually had Peter saying, "Hello, sweetie." So that was actually a really great moment.
My favourite line when I opened the script and went, "Oh, this is great," was when I got to punch Hitler in the face. I just phoned Steve up and went, "Thank you." Thank you. Over here.
Hello, this question is for Alex, but I'd love to hear the opinion of both of you. I think names are really influential in TV, and I know with the Melody, Pond, River Song name combination, how do you think that your characters are influenced by their names in the Doctor Who universe and other characters that you portray in movies and TV shows?
It was actually my husband that discovered this. And I don't know whether we've discovered it by accident. I don't even know if Stephen Moffat knows it himself, or whether it's just that he is a massive Van Morrison fan, and just somehow in his subconscious, my name of River Song came up. But if you listen to Van Morrison's Crazy Love, listen to the first verse.
Really?
Yeah. That's all I'm going to say. You're all going to have to go and download Van Morrison's Crazy Love.
That's amazing. You've just set that to number one.
Yeah.
Fans going to be like, what?
Yes. But I, funnily enough, some of the other jobs I've done, the writers quite clearly are Doctor Who fans. Because I had a character named Miranda Pond, which was an absolute nod to Doctor Who. And I've also worked on shows where writers have added spoilers or something just to sort of keep the thread of connection going, which I think is really fun. And again, it just shows actually how widespread the fan base is for this show. It even extends into sort of Hollywood writers and that universe. So it's quite interesting.
Mm-hmm. I think the right names are really important. I think people grow into their
names. And I think it's so, like, I think Rory would have been very different if he was called like Thor. I think it would have affected him growing up a lot more, which is why I'm calling my son Thor.
Do you ever find yourself doing something particularly rivery or, well, I suppose, Arthurian in real life or in another performance?
Do you know what's interesting? Because I actually, I'm quite a shy person, really, and I think very often actors are, and it's a way to sort of open up and find confidence in themselves by being other people. And it's the weirdest career choice because acting a lot of the time is all about rejection. So it's sort of like the worst career choice if you're somebody who's quite sensitive or shy. So it's kind of bizarre. But when I come to conventions or when I take on a sort of a semi-persona of it's myself plus character. It's sort of like I morph slightly into River. Like, I am Alex right now, but I'm Alex with a sort of sprinkling of River as well, because that's who I'm talking about this weekend. And so it's almost like the character sort of has been sleeping and then just wakes up and goes, okay, bring it on. Or if I'm playing, when I was playing Lady Macbeth, my husband said, yes, I was different. it's sort of true that as actors, you sort of, the characters that you are working on, kind of they're a little bit like spirits that that sort of take you over slightly, and you're not really aware that they are, but they do.
Yeah. Do you ever find Rory making appearance?
Well, do you know what? When I first started, Doctor Who came at such a right time for me, because I was quite a nervous, shy, socially awkward man at that point in my life. Okay, but similar to what you're talking about, mate, that was what was going on inside, and then I'd go out and be sociable and then go, oh God, what did they say to him? And it was so much fun playing a character who had that nervous energy and also had that beautiful world of just questioning everything. This is kind of what I was going through at that time in my life. And as Rory gained in confidence, I definitely gained in confidence. So there was a lot of mirroring of what was going on. And then I became a Roman soldier and I was made plastic. So it was really similar to my life. at the time there was a lot of stuff going on. Also, I panic a lot. Like if something happens, I don't think I run straight towards it. I definitely run away. So there are little things that still hang on in my mind.
Hello.
Lovely hair.
Thank you. I want to tell you guys that River Song, Amy, and Rory are some of my favorite characters in Doctor Who. And my question is, if you could make any room in the TARDIS, what would it be?
Ooh. You can design a room in the TARDIS. We talked about this a lot, and I don't know why they don't show that, I suppose it's really expensive. But I always thought it was like a big swimming pool.
We've got a swimming pool.
I dived into it. Why didn't we have a swimming pool?
What? I dived into it. That's how I was saved. We have a swimming pool.
I don't really get it.
By the way, even though you never saw it or could swim in it, it's really nice.
I just had the best swimming pool ever.
Best swimming pool ever.
I only got to see lots of corridors, but all the same corridor. The go-kart room would be fun. The donut room. The foot massage room. I think the possibilities are endless.
I think it'd be nice to have a movie, a screening room as well, cinema, little private cinema.
Yeah, the bar.
With popcorn.
Yeah, with like every movie.
With every movie ever, exactly. Yeah. I think that'd be really cool.
But there'd be a pretty good music library in there too.
Yeah, we do have that already. Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Some great tracks. That you will never hear.
It was great with the swimming pool.
The bouncy castle room. The dancing dogs room. Oh, a room full of dogs that you can just cat. And then a cat room for the cats. But they never mix.
I think working at this card is quite nice.
You know.
I think you'd be a doctor. Good question. Thank you. Over here.
So my question is, as an actors, there's always that scene in, say, one show that they really enjoy doing, but what, in all the shows that you've done, what one scene did you guys do that you felt had the most emotion, that you really liked doing and thought had the most emotion on the show?
I honestly don't know. Like, there's still lots of Doctor Who stuff. In the Girl Who Waited, we had those scenes where we had to be either side of the TARDIS door when you can. They were really emotional for my experience. I don't know. I think the scene where I accidentally killed her with my robot hand, although that seems to be totally ludicrous, like saying it out loud, that was a big scene to film. That was quite emotional. Roller coaster. Yeah.
I'd say actually I've had three moments which were emotionally really sort of quite tough for me to kind of hold it together through. And the first was when with David, when River sacrifices herself in order to save him. And even though I'd only been in that storyline and I knew that that's what was happening to her, it was still, and she was being strong by sacrificing herself, but at the same time, I was getting very emotional. I was just like, because David was getting emotional, and I was looking at him going, "You're not supposed to cry, you're the doctor." And then I also was kind of wanting to cry because I'd had such a good time and I knew it was coming to an end, personally. And then when I was working with Matt, and it was the don't remember the name of this episode. It's the one where River comes back and she's already been saved, and it's yes, exactly, the name of the doctor. And that was very frustrating because, again, it was where Matt's doctor is saying to River, who's been saved, is saying, you have to go. You've got to say goodbye. And we typically, Doctor Who is always, you know, the way we film, it's always a kick, bollock, scramble, and the acting, the actual business of acting is the last thing that anybody thinks about, because they always just concern themselves with all the technical stuff. And so literally we had this whole day where knowing that there was this very, very important emotional scene to play, and we had 5 minutes at the end of the day in which to achieve it, and they were faffing around with the bloody lights and the ivy and the, you know, everything else except the acting. And I only had one take in which to do this scene, and I was so just trying to hold it together, and I could see Matt getting so cross and frustrated, and the two of us sort of looking at each other, and the tears started rolling, and it was so hard for me. And then the third time was with Peter, when we're at the very end of that Christmas episode, special episode, and again, I had to try and hold it together in a way because I don't know what's about to happen to me, but of course I do, because I've lived it all. And seeing Peter Capaldi, who's very held, looking at him and seeing him start to go, and then I was like, Grant, you can't go, because you're not supposed to know. So it was sort of very, very tough. But it's those three moments, absolutely, for me.
Mm. Is there either an episode or a scene that you wish you could kind of go back, travel back in time, and be sort of a fly on the wall and watch just as yourselves are kind of going through that scene or performing? Maybe it's because it packed an emotional punch. Maybe it's because it was a significant moment, or maybe because you couldn't process it at the time and couldn't feel the impact of it.
I think filming our last episode, The Angels Take Manhattan, was a bit of a whirlwind for myself and Karen. Karen refused to read the episode before we started filming because she couldn't deal with the fact that we were leaving. And it just went by so quickly. You think you're going to... I mean, like you said, we film it so fast. And it's a horrible feeling when you leave a day and go, oh, God, I wish I just had one more take on that scene. And it happens so often because you just move on straight on to the next thing. And that episode, I just wish I could kind of grasp hold of it and remember a bit more about what was going on, because it was such a highly charged emotional thing.
Yeah.
I would like to go back to the diner where I slap Matt Smith in the face. And I'd just like to watch that over and over
again. It was like that repeat. Yeah. Rewind, unslap.
I actually had to slap him 8 times. When I slap, I don't pretend. I really do. And I could see the first time he was sort of like, okay. And by 8, I could see he was really cross with me. And his cheek was red, and he was like, okay, I don't have to do it quite so hard.
I love you, you're a little evil, but...
This question's for Alex. I know you've got a chance to work with Peter and with David and with Matt. Which one would you say was your favorite to work with?
Who's the best?
Yes, yes. Question to ask, because there's no good response on that.
There's no good response other than they are all the same man. Different sizes. I'm not complaining.
I shouldn't be the one blushing up here.
This question is for both of you. What's the craziest thing you've been asked to do on set as an actor?
Craziest thing I've been asked to do on set as an actor. God, I don't know. I had to do, like, I'm not built as a fighter. I'm a lover.
You're a lover, not a fighter?
Physically.
A song.
I'm physically made as a lover, but not a fighter. Legends of Tomorrow, I had to do a fight in a Russian spa in a towel. And I had to fight this giant bloke. And I was like, are you sure you want me to do this? And I was petrified. But it was great fun. And I got to beat up a guy. And that's something that I thought I'd never get the chance to do, beat up a sweaty man in a spa. Yeah, that was the most unexpected. I did phone the producer and go, are you sure? Still, yeah.
Like, sense emboldened you to join all sorts of fight clubs and whatnot, right? Just get into brawls. Yeah.
I once, very early on actually, I was doing, in fact, it was sort of the show that then got me onto ER. I did a mini series called Mont Flanders,
And I had to spend about a week, but she's telling her life story from where she's in jail and she's waiting to be hung. And so we had lots of sort of flashbacks to her life, but then coming back to her present, which was in the jail cell. And I was sitting there for a week with rats all nestled under my armpits and in my crotch and everything. Yeah, they were clean rats, but they were made to look dirty. You know, they.
Yeah.
But they like, because they wanted it to look like the clink, which was a prison in England. And the rats just, they want to go to warmth. And so they kind of all just got under my clothes and started just nestling down in my body. And I had to deal with it. that was sort of weird. That's, you know, it's... If you want to be an actor, that's what you have to do.
I did animals are a funny guy. I did a terror when I was a student, before I was even at drama school, and I was a teenager, a friend of mine was like, let's make a horror film. And so we made it, you can't see it, or no one will ever see it, it's awful. But there was a scene where I had to drink a cup of coffee, and then the coffee turned into maggots in my mouth. And so they cut, and it was just like, it was like me, a cameraman, a director. It was just a bunch of mates, and so we got these maggots, and they were like, right, so you just put them in your mouth, and they were, so I got them in my mouth, and they all just crawled out. And it was horrible. But the guy whose flat it was, we didn't clean up after ourselves, and he was working on the film with us, and he was a bit. He didn't clean up properly, there were maggots everywhere. So the next week, his house was full of flies. Oh. Yeah, that's the weirdest thing to put it.
We're technically out of time, but I feel like we need a palate cleanser question right there. So if you can make it like a very, very brief, almost like yes-no question, we're going to take one more.
No question.
No pressure. Okay, my best question so far.
Any other questions?
No, no question. Okay. Well,
Twitter questions.
Okay. Well, this is now taking too long, so let's just wrap it here then. But